out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 246. This is the frustrated edition here at the Caffeination podcast, for reasons which may or may not become readily available relatively shortly. It's been kind of a crazy weekend here at the Caffeination. It's been a long weekend. I had a Friday off, which was fantastic. However, I've been doing projects around the house the entirety of the time I've been home, and some of them have gone great, some of them not so much. So it's just kind of been frustrating because I'm used to computers. You know, I like things that have like a set troubleshooting process associated with them and rules that I understand. When it comes down to handyman stuff, I either know my way around what I'm supposed to be doing, or I can kind of fiddle it through most of the time. But past couple projects, I gotta tell you, it's been laughable the mistakes I've made. So we're trying to just kind of gloss over that at this point, fix what I messed up, and hopefully everything will work out in the end. But it's got a great show lined up for you today. I'm pretty excited about some of the content that we're going to be throwing at you. It's going to be kind of cool. On today's show, you're going to hear about any and all of the following stuff: Facebook, roller coasters, gutters, robots, toasters, TSA, and coffee. It's all topics that you may or may not have heard here in the Caffeination podcast before. And if you're new to the show, we'd like to say hi and welcome. This is, of course, the Caffeination podcast. This is the high-tech world of caffeine culture and technology news. So it's we like to try and blend the two things together, because I personally couldn't exist if I wasn't caffeinated. And at the same point in time, I can't really separate the rest of my life from technology and my love thereof. So I like to think that they've kind of fit well together in one little show. So even if you're not a coffee drinker, we got plenty of news and fun stuff for you at the end of the show. We kind of split it up into two different sections. One's the tech cruft. It's just general junk that I find laying around online. It's interesting stuff. Either we have like the hard-hitting real good news, or we have the tiny little fluff pieces that float out there every once in a while. So hopefully you'll find that fun. And then we move on to the caffeine and food, because I love food and I love caffeine. So I thought they deserved their own section to kind of separate the two different divergent topics, and hopefully they can all meld into one lovely user experience here at the Caffeination podcast. If you are looking for this episode and somehow you found it without being at our homepage, then you too can head on over to www.caffeination.com. Coincidentally enough, that's caffeination.com. And for all of the people who've listened to this show before, for all of our repeat offenders, the people who just like punishment, thank you so much for coming back. You are the reason that we continue to do this show. You are the reason, the royal we there. It's actually just me here. Me and a bunch of computers, but you are the reason that I continue to do this show. You make the experience of podcasting a reality here. You make it very fun and very enjoyable with the back and forth, and with just knowing that there's people out there who are interacting with me who I may never even get to meet. So it's just kind of cool and fun to think about, and I'd like to thank you for joining in on the experience that we got going here for you. All right, before we get on into the meat and potatoes of today's episode, I would like to send a huge heartfelt congratulations out to my friend Fabrice. He recently left Temple, and he went on to another company. Don't want to give too much information out about it, other than the fact that he will be sorely missed at Temple University. It's been fantastic working with you for these past 5 years, Fabrice, and I know that you're going to do nothing but fantastic things in the future. So I just wanted to send out a nice congratulations out there, because I know you're really busy in your first week. So if you happen to catch an episode of the Caffeination podcast a la old times, then hopefully you'll come across this little nugget. But just wanted to put it out there, because you know it always is really horrible when you lose good people in the company that you're used to working with. So it's going to be definitely a different user experience at work. So all the best going forward, my friend. All right, we're going to get right on into the tech cruft here, because we got a lot of news to talk to you about today. Hopefully you're going to find some of it interesting in the very least. Up first, we have an article from over at TechCrunch, which is something that I kind of wanted to put out there, but I don't necessarily want to speak exactly what they're talking about. They're talking about hacking Facebook, and they're saying the Facebook platform has a lot of information that they store about people. They have, you know, your name, your relationship status, your birthday, the colleges, the hometowns, absolutely everything from political affiliation to actual pictures. They have all other kinds of work history. They're LinkedIn on steroids, because there's so much user information that's in Facebook, and it's not very portable at this point in time. So there's all different ways of hacking that platform to get your data out. But what I really wanted to talk to you about with this isn't necessarily that article, although it's a very good article, and if you have chance, you should head on over there and read it. It's rather the idea behind it. I really like the idea of data portability, and I don't understand why there's so much resistance to it from some of the social networks that are out there. And I understand that a lot of them are starting to open up their doors, and I think it's really cool. But at the same point in time, it's almost kind of antithetical to their existence to not open the doors, because the entire value behind Facebook and MySpace and LinkedIn and all of the other episodes of the same instance that are out there, basically they're all the same thing with different little tweaks. People hated the fact that MySpace was ugly as sin, and so there was Facebook. That's basically the reason that people migrated from the one to the other. There was a different user experience. It was cleaner. Now Facebook has applications out the yin-yang, and it's beginning to look somewhat MySpace-ish. So, it's kind of interesting to look at the different applications, how they all sort of meld into each other, and MySpace was a replacement for Friendster, and it's been going on and on. It was probably an outcropping of the original social network, which was your friends list, your buddy list on IM and everything, so it's kind of interesting to see that, but the entire value system based that these things are based on is the fact that they have your data, and the fact that they can, you know, market to you, because they know exactly what demographic you are. That's one of the basic tenets of a social network. So the fact that they don't let you control your data to a certain extent, it's not portable, you can't just take your contact list with you, always kind of irritated me, and kind of, I don't know how to actually go about, you know, describing the feeling it was, but other than the fact that it's like, we are the ones who give you the value for your system. Your system would be nothing except an empty database. I mean, you could have the world's most efficient database sorting algorithm, but if you didn't have any information to sort, it wouldn't mean anything. If there was not a customer to buy it, then it's essentially useless. So it's very much of a political statement, but these organizations need to start realizing that they need to make this, even the smaller bits of information, portable. They need to allow you to take one data set from one to the other. So it's in that kind of vein that I started creating my own web presence index, because I had other people contacting me and say, oh, I found this guy named Caffeination, but it was spelled slightly different out there, and, you know, is this you? And I started, you know, there's a couple different blogs that are out there that have used the word Caffeination, even though the funny thing is, Caffeination, as it is spelled on my homepage, is a misspelling of the term caffeination, specifically because Caffeination is the caffeine nation. I kind of joined the two things together when I created the domain name. If you want to spell Caffeination correctly, it's Caffeination. That's because caffeine is spelled EI in the middle, and people misspell it all the time. So there's other people out there who go by that type of handle. So I created my own web presence index at paulrmuller.com, and it just kind of lists all the different things that I am associated with, all the different blogs that I write for, all the different pieces of content that you can trace back to me, and all the different social networks. And I was putting that out there on Plurk the one day, and somebody actually said, well, does that mean that I can friend you on Facebook, or does that mean that I can join up with you on Twitter? I said, yeah, that's one of the reasons that I put it out there. If you know me from one of the other networks and you are on another one, you'd like to connect with me there, please feel free to do so. I have to put something up on that website there. There's also probably going to end up being a rolling blog associated with it, but it's sad that we have to do that. Yes, there's all these convergence applications like FriendFeed and Plaxo and all this other different stuff that are out there. And I don't want to belabor the point too much, but other than that, you know, the most valuable resource we have is our contact information. And there's a group of people out there who've changed their birthday on everything, so that way they know who is selling their data. So that way, if you have it written down that on MySpace you actually had a different middle initial, like your name instead of mine being Paul R. Muller, it was Paul M. Muller, you know, and so all of a sudden you start getting emails and letters and everything for Paul M. Muller, then you would know, well, first of all, you would know that you're using my contact information and not your own, which is bad, but you would also know that, for instance, MySpace would be selling your information then. Then they would also, for security purposes, actually put the incorrect birthday, which I thought was interesting, but I've never actually gone back and actually decided to change my birthday in any of them. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, and I might consider it. Just wanted to kind of put the topic out there to see what anybody else thought about it. The rest of the topics today aren't nearly as heady, but I just wanted to kind of lead off with that. And if it went over your head, please feel free to drop us a comment or something like that. If you don't understand what we're talking about, we'd be glad to help explain things out there. And, you know, that's basically what we're trying to work towards, a different conversation that goes back and forth here. Then completely on the opposite side of the seriousness spectrum, how would you like to own your own roller coaster? Yeah, I know, kind of switching gears there without actually using the clutch. But, you know, that's what the idea behind this little gadget is. It's called the Buzz Ball. Imagine a geodesic dome that is completely perfect. It's an entirely enclosed system in which you can drive your own roller coaster like experience. So there's a captain's chair in the middle of this ball that has plexiglass viewports on it, and you have just a big wide open space, and you can drive it in one direction or another. It actually spins you around, you do barrel rolls and all other kinds of different things, and it's not available yet to actually get. I don't know where you would actually use these things, because I like the idea of it. I think it's a really interesting concept, first of all, because it eliminates people's fear of heights, because a lot of the reasons that some people don't use roller coasters is either they don't like that initial first drop or they don't like heights in general. So this is a completely different thing. This is going to speak directly to the people who are claustrophobic, because all of a sudden, instead of being up really high, you're enclosed in a ball. So it's your very own little hamster wheel. I kind of like the idea, and it's pretty cool, but I don't know exactly how it's going to work out. I mean, how would you use this it would have to be relatively expensive, and you'd need to kind of wander out into a field, and there needs to be some kind of emergency brake where it just kind of like pops out some supports or something to be able to stop you before you roll into traffic if you're trying it in like a ball field or something like that. But I like the idea. It's just kind of crazy, you know? And then the next little thing we have up here is it's a roller coaster called the Blue Flash. Apparently a man by the name of John Ivers has decided that he no longer... This is an older page. This goes back to 2002, but I recently had this sent to me. So, you know, hey, I'm only 6 years too late. But this gentleman decided that he didn't want to wait long enough for... He didn't want to wait in lines anymore, so he decided to create his own roller coaster. He had a certain amount of welding skill and a certain amount of engineering kind of potential and everything like that, so he decided to give it a shot and give it a run through. So he created his own roller coaster with what looks like a seat out of a van, like a captain's seat in a van, and there's a tiny little there's a tiny little handle in the front that he holds on. It goes up over what appears to be either a greenhouse or some type of shed, and he's in a rural area. And there's actually a loop-de-loop. Yes, there's a 360-degree loop that he actually goes through. And it looks incredibly kind of rough hewn and really kind of has an interesting bit of flair to it. There's an amusement park that's in the Pennsylvania, like the middle of Pennsylvania, called Knoebels. And it was, up until about 6 months ago, family-owned for like 40 or 50 years. And it's a really interesting park in that it's free admission. You just have to pay for whatever rides you go on, which is a model that I think that a lot of the places actually should adopt, because my wife doesn't like roller coasters. And when she goes into Dorney Park or Six Flags or anything like that, she doesn't go on any of the roller coasters, so why should she have to pay for an experience that she's not, you know, partaking in? She's not holding up the line. She's holding the stuff as people go on, you know? If anything, they should be paying her, because, you know, we don't have to, you know, I don't even know. But so this is just an interesting little outcropping of that, and it kind of brings back memories of going to Knoebels, and we went last year, we're going again this year, but it's kind of cool that, you know, this is kind of like social media. This is kind of like trying to promote your website or anything through like a social network. You know, there's not really safety rails. There's not really handheld. There's no emergency brake. There's not all the fun little OSHA requirements getting in your way. But, you know, it has one of two outcomes. Either you do the right thing and it ends up making it all the way over the loop-de-loop, or you end up strapping your kid in there and something bad happens. But, you know, there's a video of it, and it looks really cool, and everything went off without a hitch, but it's just kind of fun to see and play around with what this could be associated with. But I really love this, and I think it's an awesome little roller coaster. Hopefully you did some upgrades since 2002. It's been completed. You know, the whole ride was really fun. You should head on over there and check it out. All right, up next here we have a review of iRobot Luge. I love the name of this thing. iRobot, the company that makes the Roomba and the Scuba and all the other stuff, they have a real knack for naming products. So they have developed what they call a robot to clean gutters, and it's called the Luge. So basically this thing's a three-stage auger, so it's a giant drill bit that basically runs around in your gutters. The only thing is, it's not really an autonomous robot, not like a Roomba or a Scuba or anything like that. You actually have to control it, so it's more of a remote control car. Now they say that, you know, it doesn't really do corners and a bunch of other stuff. And I was looking at it, I was like, okay, you know, $99 isn't a bad price point for a mechanical assistance for something that, you know, is otherwise relatively irritating. I don't know because I don't have gutters. but, you know, the house we live in, there's no trees around, there's no gutter system as per what these people would be using it for. But I do know a lot of people who have larger houses in the countryside, and gutters are the absolute bane of their existence because they have these lovely shade trees around the house, and it basically, you know, it's a, like a weekend-long project to clean all the gutters out correctly. So I like the idea. It's just I think they should have thought a little bit more along the lines of what they were used to doing. They're not a remote control car company. They're a robot company. It's not iRemote. It's iRobot. So it should have been able to navigate a turn. Maybe they'll use some of that snake robot technology that's been floating around, but it should have been able to navigate a turn, and it should have also been able to operate autonomously. Maybe beep or just run down a downspout and out the bottom. That would be cool. When it was done, just drop into the nearest downspout. Yeah, that would be fun. All right, moving up next, we have another little robot thing here. Zappos, one of the shoe retailers that's out there. Up until this point, from the time that you picked your shoes, it took 0.9284 minutes after your order to a human running and dropping it into the system so that you would actually get your shoes. They've decided that was very inefficient. So for some reason, the distance between, you know, you picking your shoe online and them shipping it out, or them placing it in the area to be shipped, you know, that just wasn't working for them. So they decided to go with an entirely different system. This is called a mobile fulfillment system. You have to absolutely love that. It's a fleet of robots that actually drive inventory. They manage units and stuff like that, so they can actually run all the stuff around practically flawlessly. As long as things are placed on the shelves correctly, they're able to conquer the warehouse. I like this idea, and I think it's kind of cool, but at the same point in time, you know, the low-paying jobs that are out there are some of the stuff that's really hard to replace in an economy. So as soon as you start seeing those jobs kind of go away, then you know that we're in for trouble. So I don't know exactly how many people were employed in this facility, and I also don't know if there's going to be, you know, massive mistakes when something like power goes out or you know, a system fries or something like that. But I know that, you know, when you have completely autonomous systems running, I personally get a little uneasy. I think it's really cool and I think it's kind of neat, but at the same point in time, the failures might not be as often, but they're probably going to be more catastrophic. So, all right, moving right along here. I don't know why that just happened. I don't know how many of you out there actually enjoy the movie Caddyshack. I absolutely love it. And there's one character specifically, Rodney Dangerfield's character in it, that I just think is fantastic. And I know that a lot of other people feel the same way. And this golf club, I don't personally golf. I don't like the sport. I don't like watching it. I pretty much like the driving range and playing mini golf. But other than that, you know, I've never really had the chance to go out there. I just don't know. There's nothing about it that seems to appeal to me. So when everybody was all excited about the Tiger Woods thing not too long ago, I was kind of meh. It didn't really faze me one way or another. But if all golf clubs were this cool, I might be persuaded to actually give it a shot. This is called the Big Daddy Drivers. Now, when you hit your golf ball into the high weeds, the rough as they call it, and you have to play it where it lies, or else you're involved in a stroke penalty. You know, basically, they add extra points to your score if you want to move it around. So the play it where it lies thing becomes a little bit more irritating when you know, you get into a point where you can't actually see the ball. But there's nothing in the rules of golf that say you can't modify the terrain around where your ball is so that you can actually hit it. So with that in mind, the Big Daddy Driver combines two relatively interesting gadgets together. First of all, it's a driver, so you can actually use it, and it you know, can hit the ball a decent amount, I guess. But the other thing is that it's a weed whacker, so that you can actually, it looks like it clears somewhere around a 6-inch little area around where the ball is to give you a better idea where it is so you can hit it. I love this idea, and I would love for them to somehow incorporate it into some kind of Caddyshack-esque style video. I think this thing could really take off. There's a lot of geeks out there that, you know, I personally would edge my lawn with a golf club. I think it's that cool. I don't think that it's actually, there's no price point that they listed there. Oh wait, I'm sorry, it's only going to be $50, and it runs on 6 AA batteries, which are all rechargeable in this house. I mean, that's a very interesting way. I don't know how good it is at edging. It doesn't look like it did a very nice and even job, but I think anytime you're dealing with high grass and it cuts it down nice and low for you to hit the ball, that's pretty good return for your investment. $50. I'm pretty sure most golf clubs are probably more expensive than that. All right, moving right along. I haven't been doing a lot of flying recently, but I'm probably going to be stepping it up just a little bit in the future because, you know, business trips and things like that. So I really haven't had to deal with a lot of the different and very restrictive ordinances put in place by the TSA. And one of the things that I'm constantly surprised at, and every time I hear about it and I forget about it for a little bit and comes back, is there are limitations on liquids, things like shampoos and stuff like that, that you can't place in your carry-on bag because, you know, theoretically they could be used as some kind of explosive because, you know, Prel is highly contagious and bad. Now, I understand why they're making a lot of the different changes that they've made. It's just really irritating to fly because of these things. So there's a company that's out there that's put out a new product called Paper Shampoo. Basically, uses the same technology where if you've ever seen like the flakes of soap that are out there, or the my wife actually got this present for a bridal shower she went to. It's these little roses that are actually made entirely of soap. Each petal is enough to wash your hands. So if you pull one petal off, wet it, you can actually rub your hands together and it'll give you enough soap to wash, and it has a nice pleasant smell, and it's kind of interesting. But it's basically pressed sheets of soap. For 30 single-use packets, you can actually get each container is $12.50, which is a significant increase on the standard VO5, which is like $1.49, and that's something like, I don't know, 40 uses, depending on how much hair you actually have. But so it's kind of irritating that you're being forced in that direction. Or if you just head to a bunch of hotels, you can always just use the tiny little bottles that they give you. I like this product because it definitely feeds a need that's out there, but I don't like this product because of what it represents. It represents, you know, how inefficient some of the systems that we have in place for detecting untoward actions are. So I just wanted to put it out there because I kind of thought it was cool. And hey, if you're one of those people who does a lot of traveling, this might be worth it for you. So wanted to kind of put it out there. All right, up next we actually have a kind of an interesting little 3D display system that was put out there. All right, there it is. I had it in the wrong order. Silly me. It's a new interactive holographic display. So basically, this person has taken the DLP technology. The researchers, at the Institute of Southern California, ICT Graphics Lab, have decided to use the chip that's currently in the DLP TVs that are out there, which is thousands of tiny mirrors, has that tiny little chick standing on the football field with the little cube where it opens up and goes, "It's the mirrors." You know, it was a very prevalent ad during football season, and a bunch of other different derivations of the ad have aired since. But they've found a way to actually rotate this chip somehow, and regardless of where you're standing in reference to this, it will actually create a three-dimensional object. And one of the initial images that they put out there was actually of a wireframe TIE fighter, so that you could stand anywhere around it and see it. The interesting part about their choice was one of the authors over at Ogizmo, where I'm linking up to the article, he says what it means is that a projected hologram is updated around 200 times a second. So, you know, what it means is, you know, your standard monitor is refreshing at 60 times a second, you know, basically house current. So three times, a little bit over three times that refresh rate to actually make this thing work. And the funny thing is, he said, they actually picked a 1980 wireframe TIE fighter model, which will ensure their research and the website gets plenty of free publicity. So he's really right with that analysis of why they picked this, because, you know, who's going to be interested in this? Geeks are. And what's one of the things that will immediately make a geek share something with somebody else? Well, if you include some kind of reference back to Star Wars or any other really bastion of geek culture. So if you were in for bullseyeing Womp Rats without a T-16, then you too can get your very own 3D holographic projector out there. I wonder if it can only do wireframes, because one of the other videos that they have, it's a wireframe of a human head. Now, I like the idea. I think it's going to be really cool, and I would love to see somebody actually, you know, do a full render of a building, like an architectural building from like AutoCAD documents or something like that. Build it in 3D. I think that would be fantastic to see. But, you know, so far we have a TIE fighter and a human head. Other than that, we're moving right along here. I don't know how many of you know this, but there was another recent move in the corporate world. As of June 27th, 2008, Bill Gates is no longer an active employee at Microsoft. He is retired. He's going back to doing things that whatever he wants. He's working with the charities that he's involved in. So it's kind of an interesting, different world that we now see ourselves in, where Microsoft is no longer led by the founder. And some people are saying whether or not Jobs is going to eventually follow suit. I personally don't think so, but there's a neat little article that was actually put up there called The Original Quote-Unquote Microsoft Family. So 30 years ago, when Bill Gates was only 23, Microsoft only had 11 people. I'm sorry, there were a dozen people working for the company. So they did a company photo shoot, which is relatively famous in the realm of geek culture, where they had all the different original people who worked at Microsoft, from Bill Gates to Paul Allen to all the other the big wigs in the company at the time. The only person who wasn't in the picture was the secretary, the mother of the office. And they actually worked in New Mexico, Albuquerque, New Mexico. It's interesting little picture, because when you're looking at it, you're saying, man, that is definitely a 70s era photo shoot. And then what they recently did was they recreated the photo shoot, minus the one person who actually passed away. And it wasn't the secretary. It was actually one of the other people who worked there. Bob Wallace left Microsoft in 1983 and passed away in 2002. So they recreated the photo with everybody in their original position, and then they also recreated the photo, including the former office secretary, Miriam Lobau, because she actually stayed home because there was a snowstorm the day that they took the original picture. So it's kind of cool. It's a fun article to read, and it's an interesting little kind of vignette back into Microsoft's history. So it's going to be a fun ride going here forward to see actually what happens with the company that now it's left without its... It's a founder. It's going to be weird. I know we're not going to see anything change in the next couple years, probably, but it's just an interesting little, almost a philosophical discussion, because was their position on open source software a direct reflection of Bill Gates? Was it something more of a company-wide policy? We're going to see a whole bunch of different things change in the future, and it's going to be interesting to see exactly how it all wraps around, you know? All right, moving right along to the caffeine and food section here at the Caffeination Podcast. We have a, first up, a little article. We have a couple different things out of Japan today, but there's a highly caffeinated non-alcoholic beer for children currently being sold in Japan. It's called Kodomo no Nominomo. Yeah, it literally translates as children's drink. So basically, it's sold in a stereotypical beer bottle. It's sold and it looks like beer. It actually has a nice frothy head when you pour it. And the funny thing is, they have three different pictures there. The one's a very young little girl holding a beer bottle of this stuff, and it's very cute looking. Another is a kid, obviously at dinner, drinking his very own little beer. And the third, the one up at the top of the article, is actually a somewhat disgruntled looking person, probably looking to drown his sorrows in his very own little children's beer. So I just kind of thought it was kind of cool. The only thing is, it's caffeinated, which I didn't think that you were actually supposed to be giving caffeinated beverages to young children. But then again, I'm pretty sure most of us were raised on soda at some point in time or another. The person actually did a nice review of it. They give it a taste of 8, and they said it does not taste anything like beer, which is probably a good thing, because you don't want to get kids actually, you know, used to the taste of beer without the actual beer, the alcohol or anything like that. But it's kind of an interesting little problem, because if I was going to taste something that looked like beer and didn't necessarily smell like beer, and I tasted it and it was completely unlike beer, I don't know how I would react, because it's kind of a shock to the system. It's kind of like, you know, when you go to eat like a piece of chocolate or something like that and find out it's like root beer flavored. It's sort of in the same family. It might even look similar, but it's completely off the radar of what you were expecting. So it's kind of interesting. Apparently there is corn syrup and sugar in this, so this thing's not incredibly healthy. And the package is either a 2 or an 8, depending on how offended you are by the actual picture. I don't think it's relatively offensive. It might be a little bit stereotypical, but then again, it's a Japanese beverage, so it's kind of... I don't understand if that could then be stereotypical, because they're the ones producing it, so I don't even know. All right, moving right along to the next little article that we have here is that Anheuser-Busch has recently decided to stop selling Alka-Pops, which is what everybody actually calls alcoholic energy drinks. So there were two brand names that they had out there called Tilt and Bud Extra. And of course, they take the high road with this. They're saying, quote-unquote, Anheuser-Busch, the largest brewing company in the United States, has taken the important action to protect young people from attractive alcohol advertising and marketing. No, what you're doing is you're taking something off the market because it's a hot-button issue at this point in time. And probably because the sales were lackluster at best. When somebody says, I want an alcohol and a caffeine beverage at the same point in time, they're going to ask for probably one thing and one thing only, and that's going to be a Red Bull and vodka. Just because you put two brands out there that didn't actually hit the need of what the market was looking for. You know, nobody's looking for Buzz Beer from the Drew Carey Show. They're looking for a stronger drink with a more of an energy drink background. So they're saying other alcohol manufacturers should follow Anheuser-Busch's lead and eliminate dangerous combinations of caffeine and alcohol from the marketplace. I'm pretty sure Irish coffee's been around for a while. They're citing back to all these different stories that were out there that said children who young adults, fresh out of college and whatnot, who are drinking alcohol and which has caffeine in it, don't think they're that drunk. Well, here's the problem with that. If you ask any college student, no matter how drunk he actually is, whether or not he thinks he is drunk, he's probably, or he or she in this case, is probably going to say no. So the inclusion of caffeine, it kind of nullifies the sleepiness associated with drinking a lot of alcohol, but it's not necessarily less drunk. It's just more awake. I don't really see the uproar over it. I personally think it's that the two brands that they actually put out there are just failed brands, and they're trying to rebandage rebadge what they did as a public service, as opposed to just pulling in items that failed. The next little thing we have up here is actually a little study on canned coffee. There is a wonderful little truck on Temple's campus that sells teppanyaki, and they have Japanese canned coffee in there. They have all the different. I don't even know if they're all Japanese actually, but there's one called Coffee Boss. And the next time I see it, I'm gonna bring it home and take a picture of the actual can, because it is fantastic. And the thing that I think separates a lot of the coffee beverages in the United States from a lot of the canned coffee beverages specifically that are sold in Japan and other countries is that the ones in other countries are actually good. All the canned coffee beverages that I've ever had in the United States either had one of two problems. Either it was so overly sweet and syrupy that it was disgusting, or it didn't actually taste like coffee. It tasted like something else. It's like a mint smoothie or something like that. A lot of them, especially the ones that have like the French vanilla flavor or something like that, they just end up like you're tasting cream soda. They're like thicker cream soda, that's all. So it's kind of interesting. This is called the American coffee, so it has a rather buxom woman laying across the front of a Chrysler. But I think it's kind of an interesting study in the fact that Japan has nailed the canned coffee market. And next time I find some Coffee Boss at the teppanyaki truck, I'll gladly take a picture. They are really, really good. So they're highly sugared, but they're very, very, very well done. So I personally give my full approval to coffee in cans. Alright, moving right along. Starbucks has decided to kill the music. They are no longer going to be selling CDs. I say thank you, because I'm tired of Starbucks doing these strange off-brand things. You know what? It's the coffee, stupid. If you fix the way your coffee tastes, I'm pretty sure your sales will increase again. I don't think they're ever going to hit those crazy highs that you used to have, basically because people have less disposable income. So your expensive coffee is no longer going to satisfy the niche that was once there between the wallet and the gas pump. So now that that's out there, you might want to start refocusing on making the actual experience of buying coffee a little bit better, and I think it's all going to work out. The more of these tiny little programs like charging for Wi-Fi or having the CD sales or all these other little things that you're trying to do along the way, the more of those you cut and the more that you focus on your core business, I'm pretty sure that you're actually going to end up pulling out of whatever funk you're currently in. But that's just my two cents. I think we've talked about it before, so I'm just going to kind of let it roll off here. All right, up next, we actually have two little toasters here, and then we're going to send you on your way. That's right, two. I count them, two. I personally love toasters. I like toast in general, but I kind of think this is funny. There's a little bit of convergence in the realm of toasterdom as well. There's two little standalone entities that we have here. One is very kind of It looks like you just basically put two appliances next to each other and then glued them together. So it looks like a toaster and a coffee pot put together, which I personally would put in my office. I think this is a fantastic little combination, and it's only $50, so it's like a high-end coffee pot and a mid-range toaster all in one. I personally enjoy the toaster oven more than the actual toaster because I think it's a little bit more versatile, but maybe a toaster oven coffee thing would be really cool. What I would like to see is if somehow they use the heating elements from the toaster side to actually heat the water in the coffee maker. I'm pretty sure they don't. I'm pretty sure they're actually two completely separate systems, but hey, what do you want for $50, you know? So I like this idea. I think it's pretty cool. It's called a breakfast set. And then the next little thing that we have out here is actually a teapot, an electric tea kettle, and a toaster all in one. The thing about this is that the design aesthetic from one to the other, while they do look like two separate entities which actually kind of fit in together, they actually look like they belong on the same countertop. They're both stainless steel. They both have the same kind of black accents to it, and I really think this is cool. And again, this is probably going to be another one of those things where if I did have it, I would definitely buy this for the office just because I like the space-saving applications that are out there. Now, if I can find one that does all three, can actually just heat water in an electric tea kettle kind of setting without having to run it through the system, which, by the way, is one of the ways that I actually make hot water in work. I just don't put a coffee filter in there, but it always has that slight little coffee taste. So I need to find a way to do that differently, but I don't want to bring an electric kettle in. So you have either the one that has the one unified design aesthetic, or you have the other one that actually has the kind of split personality, little two-face action going on. But I just kind of thought it was cool and kind of an interesting little thing that they both would come out somewhere around the same time. So this has been Caffeination number 246. Hopefully you enjoyed today's episode. I had a pretty good time giving it to you. So if you're looking for this podcast and you don't know where it is, then you can head on over to www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com, coincidentally enough. That's where all of the other episodes are lovingly nestled. The Caffeination Podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. For all the other member shows who have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content, please head on over to techpodcasts.com. If you'd like to send me a listener comment, you can do so via phone at 215-240-1319, or you can dial Skype, The Caffeination, all one word, and leave a voicemail over there. And last but most certainly not least, for any comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, whatever else you'd like to send my direction, please feel free to email me at caffeination@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening and dealing with this episode, and stay caffeinated, people.